If you weren't here last week, just to pick something, you might get 2 seconds, I promise you. But just a quick reminder from last week, we said how Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, expects righteousness to make a difference in us. In other words, he expects us to make different choices. Different choices from the hypocrisy of the religious in the first part of chapter 6, and different choices from the materialism of the irreligious in the second half of chapter 6. Choices about where our treasure is, choices about where our focus is, choices about where our loyalty is, choices that will ultimately shape our actions. They'll shape what we do. They'll shape what we give. So come and read the passage, just 3 simple things to think through. And they're all related to resting with the text of truth. You see, if this text is true, particularly if, for example, verse 24 is true, then how will you serve God with your stuff? If verse 24 is true, how will you serve God with your stuff? He says in verse 24, Jesus, that is, you cannot serve both God and money. You can't do it. Of course, remember that word money is the word mammon. It includes our possessions, it includes our material worth, it includes our earthly treasures, and Jesus said you can't serve these and God. Either God is served with single-minded devotion, or he's not served at all. Now let's push that. Let's push that truth a little. Because I want to suggest to you this morning that it's more than just saying don't serve stuff. It's more than that. It's asking us the question, how will we serve God with our stuff? See, with all the stuff that we've got, with all the possessions we've got, how will we serve God? And just so you know, you and I have stuff. We have wealth, we have money, we have possessions. I know immediately I say things like that, some of us will be tempted to say, not me. He must be talking about the person in front of me or behind me, because here's what he means. He said, well, I don't have that much, so surely this doesn't apply to me. I don't shop where she shops, surely this isn't for me. Is that what we do? We immediately want to duck. We immediately want to duck. And so can I lovingly try and put this to bed once and for all? I've done the research. I've done the statistics. I've checked with your bank managers. I want to let you know that as we sit here today, all of us are in the wealthiest half of the global population. All of us are in the wealthiest half of the global population. Most of us, if not all of us, are in the highest 10% of the world's wealthiest. And believe it or not, if you look at the statistics, many of us in the city today are in the top 1%. Many of us as we sit here this morning are in the wealthiest 1% of the global. Immediately you come back and say, no, not me. And you want to talk about cash flow, and you want to talk about bad debts or bank accounts, and you want to talk about bonds. Now let's just be clear, that's another sermon altogether. But the truth is, we came here today from our homes. We came here today in our cars. We came here today in clean clothes, or most of them did. And most of us came here and enjoyed breakfast. We are wealthy. We're wealthy. We have much. And can I just say, we've got to be honest about it. And we've got to stop feeling sorry for ourselves. And we've certainly got to stop playing a comparison game. It's time for us to rediscover gratitude for what we have rather than grumpiness for what we don't have. It's quite interesting in the scriptures how often the word grumbling. We are prone to grumbling. We've got to move on from that. When we have the righteousness of Christ, and when we have the material blessings that many of us have, we should be marked by gratitude, not by grumbling. See, we are a privileged people. Southern Cross is a privileged church, and privilege comes with responsibility. Privilege comes with responsibility. We want to be sacrificial stewards. Sacrificial stewardship. See, can I just point out to you, the big audience, that your wealth is not yours. It's not yours. Everything you have is from God, and everything you have belongs to God. It's not because of you, it's not because of your hard work, it's not because of your clever investments, it's not because of your entrepreneurial skills. Although those might be the means through which God has brought his stuff to you. But it's his stuff. It's not your stuff. It's his. And he has simply entrusted it to you for a season. It's one of the reasons why in the scriptures, when you talk about giving, the language is always give the first fruits, not the leftovers. In other words, give to God what is his to begin with. How can you hold back what is rightfully his? You see, when we give to God, and when we give to God's kingdom, we're simply giving what is God's. What's already his. It's one of the reasons why you can't take it with you. It's not yours. It's why it's left behind. It's left behind so God can entrust it to someone else for them to steward. And so you are not a man, I am not a man. And we are stewards. Stewards entrusted to serve. And can I just say, when you work that out, it becomes much easier to give it away. Just think about it. When it's mine, I don't want to sacrifice it. But when it's Lee's, I'm quite happy to sacrifice my time. I'm really happy to sacrifice somebody else's stuff. It's my problem. Well, in a sense, that's what God's saying to you. When you sacrifice, you're sacrificing God's stuff, not your stuff. See, chapter 6, verse 24 challenges with not just why you're serving God, but why you're serving God with the stuff he's entrusted to. As we sit here today, are we sacrificial stewards? Are we serving God with our possessions? Are we serving God with material possessions he's entrusted to our care? You cannot serve both God and money. I'll come back to the passage. If verse 22 is true, how then will you sow generously with your light? How will you sow generously with your light? See, if your eyes are healthy, verse 22 says, your body will be full of light. In the context and in the original language, to be filled with light is to have a generous spirit. It's to have a heart that overflows to others. And to be healthy in the context implies generosity. In contrast to the unhealthy, who are stingy with their stuff and mightily with their money. See, those who know they receive from God respond with gratitude to him and generosity towards others. So Randy Alcorn, in his book on money, writes, generosity is a reflexive response to God's grace in our lives. As God's people, we aren't motivated by altruism or philanthropy, but by the transforming work of Christ in us. God's grace is the action, our generous giving is the reaction. See, I've already said that with great privilege comes great responsibility. And so let me say simply that to those who much is given, much is expected. It's not just that we're to be sacrificial stewards, we are to be generous stewards. Generous stewards. A generous stewardship is the mark of the Christian church. And just so you know, generosity is expected for all believers, not only those in a certain income bracket. We like to think of Christian giving much like a tax. And we say to ourselves, I'm below the tax threshold. I'll start giving when I earn that much. Can I just remind you, that's one of the words in the scriptures. That every Christian person is called to give and to be generous. In fact, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 8, we are challenged to excel in the grace of giving. To excel in the grace of giving. In that passage in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, the Macedonian Christians understood this. They've got it. Listen to what Paul says of it. In 2 Corinthians 8 verse 2, listen to these words. He says, in the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. in the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. Just think about that for a moment. How is the phrase severe trial and overflowing joy and the phrase extreme poverty and rich generosity, how do they all fit together in one sentence? It fits together because the Macedonians refused to let hard circumstances keep them from the joy of giving generously. Now they were dirt poor, but they came up with every reason, if you're going to meet 2 Corinthians 8, they came up with every reason that they should give. In fact, verse 4 says, they pleaded with Paul for the privilege of giving. I need to have people knock on my door and say, Pastor, please, please let us get more money. Please. Let's share in the privilege of giving. Randy Alcorn draws the contrast. He says, well, in contrast to us, we have so much, but come up with endless justifications for not. And so verse 22, probably understood, asks whether your light is shining. It challenges us whether we are generous towards others. Do we have open hearts as part of our culture? Do we have open homes as part of our culture? Do we have open wallets as part of our culture? Do we find ways to be generous? Not just increasing amounts with inflation, are increasing the percentages we give? Are we sacrificing today to give even more tomorrow? See, as we sit here today, are you generous with your stuff? If your eyes are healthy, your whole body is full of light. Come back with me to the passage, because if verse 21 is true, then how will you store glory for eternity? See, where your treasure is, then your heart will be. And giving sacrificially and generously to God is the only investment strategy that actually makes any sense. I hate to break this to you, but nothing you store up on earth will last. It's destroyed by moss and burned and stone by fuel. The earthly treasures you prize will be left behind. And as I said to you last week, they will end up on the dump. Nobody wants your employer table. See, where is your heart? Don't know what Jesus is saying to us, but look, you can't take it with you, so why don't you send it ahead? You can't take it with you, send it ahead. Store up treasures in heaven. John Stott says, give to grow in the knowledge of Jesus, give to introduce understanding both locally and abroad, give to Christian causes that provide for those who are blessed, give to honor God rather than self as you accrue personal wealth, status, and comfort. See, investing in God's work, investing in God's work secures dividends beyond the grave. Just think about that for a moment. You can contribute today in such a way that you contribute to glory for eternity. A.W. Tozer writes, as base a thing as money is, it yet can be converted into food for the hungry and clothing for the poor. It can keep a missionary actively bringing lost men to the light of the gospel and thus transmute itself into heavenly values. Temporal possessions can be turned into everlasting wealth. That's wise stewardship. That's wise stewardship. It was Jim Elliot, the missionary who died in South America, who famously said, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. See, the danger is we try and keep all our stuff now only to lose it. Where Jesus says the wiser stewardship is lose your stuff now that you might gain it for eternity. In fact, he commends a steward who does just that. Remember in Luke chapter 16? Jesus commends the shrewd manager. The shrewd manager is about to lose his job, he's about to be fired, and before he does, he goes as the manager to all of his boss's clients and he adjusts their debt in their favor. Now, just to be clear, Jesus does not commend him for his dishonesty. I'm sure he'll have to deal with it. But he does commend him for his foresight in planning for the future. And then in Luke chapter 16, Jesus says this in verse 9. He says, use worldly wealth to gain things for yourselves. So when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Use worldly wealth to gain things for yourselves. So when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. See, the question we must ask is, are we using what God has entrusted to us for ourselves and for now? Or are we using what God has entrusted us for glory? His glory and ours, my friend. When your treasure is, then your heart will be. And so verse 21 challenges where we are investing our money and how we're using our possessions. Jump to that. Or glory to God. I wonder if, as we talk about this, it gets uncomfortable for you as a dead for me. See, I think when we stay down and look at this passage, what it means is I've got to think, I've got to reflect. But most of it, I've got to act. I've got to act. You see, right choices isn't just theory. Right choices leads to right action. Right actions in terms of how I live. Right choices I make in terms of my priorities. Right choices I make in terms of my stuff. And so as you think about your money and your possessions, can I ask you to be finished? Are you investing in eternity more than you're investing in life? And do you give from your first fruits or from your leftovers? As you sit here today, are you supporting gospel work through the local church, partnering global missions? Are you addressing the injustices and inequalities of our past in this country? Are you caring for the oppressed and the vulnerable and the poor? See, as we sit here today, amongst the wealthiest of the world,